Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast. If you listen closely in the background, you can hear my neighbor's dog screaming. Do you hear that? That's the least appealing bark I've ever heard in my life. The poor thing. That's the bark that you hear as your oarsman is carrying you across the river Styx into hell. The dog sounds like it just read the Necronomicon. Christ. This is why I wish that we had some kind of dog-to-English translator, because I'd love to know what is troubling it, aside from the fact that it has been stolen by monkey descendants and chained in a cold yard for the entirety of its existence. This is a great podcast today. It's with my dear friend Daniela Bellelli. We're going to get right to it. First, some quick business. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Shure Design T-shirts. My God, these shirts are so fucking soft. One of the saddest things you'll ever hear is that when JFK was initially assassinated and his brains went splattering all over Jackie Kennedy, the first thought that came into her mind was, they're so soft and warm. And then she thought, oh my God, this is definitely the worst day of my life, and went a little crazy. That's the feeling you get when you wear a Shure Design t-shirt. This doesn't seem like a great selling point for these shirts. This might be the worst Shure Design t-shirt commercial I've ever done. I'm going to try it again. I was in New Orleans. My brains are mush right now. My brain is a quicksand pit filled with the rotting corpses of Boy Scouts right now. And apparently it's very dark in there because all of this sounds so dark. I've got to lighten up the mood. This is a great podcast with Daniela Bellelli. Just wade through this sticky, swampy ooze that's coming out of me right now. And I swear to God, it's not going to be this kind of whatever this is. I feel great. I don't know why I sound depressed. I feel pretty good. Helicopter. I feel like I live in fucking Vietnam. Do you hear that? Not Vietnam the country, but Vietnam the war. Helicopters, screaming dogs, unidentified weird tentacly shadows floating over my neighbor's roof. The Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Shure Design T-shirts. Shure Design T-shirts creates some of the softest shirts in the business. It's as though you have not just shaved off Santa's beard, but as though Santa's beard got caught in one of his elf's machines and was torn off along with the very top layer of his facial skin. That's how soft these shirts are. It's not just the softness of Santa's beard, it's the softness of that very thin bit of skin that exists right above Santa's nerves. Santa would be in agonizing pain after this accident, but whatever lucky elf got to wear that wonderful shirt made of his beard and skin flesh, that elf would feel pretty great. Go to SureDesignT-shirts.com. If you put my name in, you will get 10% off of these beautiful shirts. They've got amazing designs. They are incredibly soft, and they are made by one of the coolest people on earth, Bennett, a man who is not afraid to kill the father of Christmas, skin and cremate him so that you can wear a comfortable shirt when you're sweating out those toxins at your Bikram yoga sessions. So go to SureDesignT-shirts.com and pick up one of these wonderful shirts. We're also brought to you by Amazon.com. Now, Amazon does this. I'm not sure why they do it. I know I've said this before, but they do a thing where if you go through our Amazon portal, which is located at DuncanTrussell.com, and buy anything from Amazon, they give us a small percentage of whatever you buy. Oh, the things I've bought from Amazon. I've bought, just this last week, Japanese bondage ropes and a Batman outfit for my dog. So there's a lot of great things you can get at Amazon.com. And before you do it, please go to DuncanTrussell.com and go through our portal. Costs you nothing. They mysteriously will give us a small percentage of whatever it is that you buy. As soon as whoever runs Amazon comes out of the alcoholic blackout that made him think that was a good idea, this thing will end. But while it is still happening, You can support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast while supporting yourself. And they've got everything that you need. Everything that you need. Except for the bondage ropes you put under your bed. We're also brought to you by Audible. Audible sells some of the greatest audio books in the world. And I'm currently listening to a Pima Chodron audiobook that is blowing my mind. And that audiobook is called Awakening Love. And if you sign up for a trial membership at Audible, you will get this book for free. It's 36 hours, and it's one of the it is the greatest breakdown of Buddhism that I've ever listened to. Pima Chodron, might be mispronouncing her name, has a really amazing way of articulating some really complex ideas, and it's very subtle, and you don't realize that really what's happening until a few hours later. You realize she's like revealed something that you've wondered about for a long time but could never figure out. God, man, I sound dumb right now. Well, it's called Awakening Love, Pima Chodron. And you get the book for free if you go to audibletrial.com/family hour and sign up for a trial membership. And I couldn't recommend this more. I mean, I guess I could, but it would sound weird probably to recommend it more. See, man, you shouldn't drink. That's what you can take away from this, what you're hearing right now. You shouldn't drink for 5 days straight. Finally, if you want to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, you can go to our shop. We're getting new logo t-shirts in. Those sold out. We have a bunch of other shirts, posters, stickers. We're going to be getting some new merchandise in soon. I just haven't figured out what that is yet. Oh, and you can also, of course, donate to the podcast if you really feel like going nuts. Oh, yes, this is what I was trying to remember. Also, I released a special bonus episode, a Halloween episode. It's $2. You can get it on iTunes. You can also get it through the website. You don't just have to listen to this episode because it's Halloween, but it was made more for Halloween. But it's pretty great because my dear friend, the pickup artist Snake, shows up. Alpha Duncan, which is the version of me with way too much testosterone, shows up. I read my favorite Edgar Allan Poe story, and there's much, much more. I think it might have infuriated some people because it's satanic. The whole episode's satanic because it's Halloween, you know? Fuck. What's scarier than Satan? I figured I'd be scary and put some satanic stuff in, so if you're offended by that stuff, don't listen. The Thanksgiving bonus episode, I think, won't be as satanic, maybe just a little satanic. But that's there for you, too, and it's a way for you to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. So, thank you, those of you who bought the bonus episode, those of you who've been donating, those of you who bought shirts, those of you who support Shore Design t-shirts or go through the Amazon portal, and to those of you who just listen or go on the message board, and those of you who send me awesome emails, forgive me if I haven't responded to you. I read all of them, though, and they always make me feel really good. And to those of you who have sent me angry emails, whoever you may be, I don't know what to say. I hope that your brain turns into a snake and chews your heart out. See, gotta quit drinking. I had stopped drinking because I was on a diet and I felt great. But when you go to New Orleans, you have to drink. It's just a rule. If you don't drink in New Orleans, then you can't really see the angels that live in New Orleans. All you'll see is giant pools of vomit and roaches crawling through your food. But if you drink in New Orleans, then suddenly it becomes a magical wonderland filled with dirty strippers and voodoo priestesses. It's a wonderful place. Well, it's actually one of my favorite cities. Today's guest on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is a philosopher, a teacher, an author. He has his own podcast, The Drunken Taoist. It's located at thedrunkentaoist.com. Of course, Taoist is spelled with a T. All the links to his books, his Twitter, and his podcast will be located at duncantrussell.com in the comments section of this podcast. Now, everyone, please embrace and love this wonderful human being and thank the great eternal Godhead for geysering out the spray of particulates that eventually coalesced into a planet, that eventually coalesced into amoeba-like primordial ooze, which eventually coalesced into symbiotic relationships with other oozing primitive sludge-like beings, which eventually transformed into ancient sharp-toothed beaver creatures living at the edge of time, which eventually transformed into the dinosaurs, which eventually transformed into oil, which eventually transformed into plastic, and eventually transformed into the recording device given to me by the wonderful Dr. Chris Ryan, and eventually transformed also into a Daniela Bolelli, who eventually came on this podcast again. So whatever I just said, do that. And Hare Krishna, everyone. Here is Daniela Bolelli. God bless you. Welcome back to the podcast, Dale. How are you?
Good, good, good. Yesterday, to give people out there an idea of the genesis of today's episode, I was peacefully sleeping in my bed, and I heard this cavernous, deep voice yelling at me. Daniele! I'm like, what the fuck? You know, who's there? What? You know, I'm half asleep. I'm all out of it. And I'm like, Daniele, you need to record a podcast with Duncan. I'm like, who the fuck are you again? You know, who's talking to me? And he's like, I'm the universe, man. Capital U and everything. You motherfucker, just get with the program. I'm going to implode unless you have another podcast with Duncan, because it's been way, way too long. So get on with it.
Way too long. Thank you, universe, for making that happen. You know, it is funny that you emailed me saying the universe had compelled you to want to do a podcast with me, because I was thinking to myself how I didn't have a podcast to put out this week, and because I was in New Orleans and I was feeling quite like a piece of shit for not doing that. So this is awesome the way that worked out. I'm glad that you are in contact with the universe.
Yeah, the universe was very, very worried about your self-esteem. And so they figured, yeah, you know, Duncan may feel bad about himself not recording for a week. So come on, go to Duncan already.
Help him out. Self-esteem. Oh my God, man. Wouldn't you love to just like get rid of that whole thing altogether? Self-esteem.
Yeah,
that's... Isn't it embarrassing, self-esteem? Or isn't it embarrassing when you feel slighted?
Yeah, because I mean, it's not... When you have it, big deal, right? You don't even think about it. When you don't have it, you realize what you're lacking every fucking second of the day, right? Because you feel like everything, you don't feel up to par with anything. Yeah. You keep feeling like, I fall short of how I should be, blah, yeah, blah, blah. It sucks. It's like being sick, you know? Like when you're healthy, you don't think about it. But every second you're sick, you're thinking about, yeah, damn, how good it is to be healthy.
Yeah. When you're insecure, you're like a human black hole. You're just trying to suck from people affirmation that you're an okay thing.
Yep.
You know, like how you, like when you have, sometimes when you have, I don't know, this probably never happens to you, but you know, sometimes when you have sex and you,
oh, that never happens to me.
Yeah,
so,
right. Yeah. I don't mean the sex part, right, but I mean, you have sex and you have the compulsion to ask, was that all right? No, it probably wasn't. If you gotta ask.
Right. I strongly resist that compulsion, but
I do too. But the feeling when you, so then when you start finding yourself in that place where you're suddenly, everything that you do is this kind of subtle manipulation,
right,
to get the person you're with to be like, I think you're great.
That was awesome. You are so amazing. You rock my world.
Oh, God. I hate being on that side of things, man. It's such a squirmy feeling, but What is that feeling? What do you think that is?
No, I mean, I think it's, to one degree, even the most secure person in the world, there's some level of insecurity in everybody, you know, because there's always that fear of failure, the fear of performance anxiety. Jesus, that's one of the most powerful things out there, you know, whether it's public speaking, whether it's sex, whether it is, who knows, you know, the idea of I'm going to step out, they're all going to look at me, and they're all going to point at laugh because they say, ha ha, you suck. It's like being in like kindergarten or something, right? Yeah. It's that experience that when you have it as a tiny kid, pisses you off forever and stays with you.
Yeah, yeah. And you're always, depending on how you were raised, that's the idea, is that you're always trying to make up for it in some way. You're trying to fill that gaping hole that is left in you by, if you have like an over demanding parents or parents who are never satisfied with you.
And even if not, of course you're gonna have less issues than the guy who had that problem, but even if you don't, everybody likes to be liked, you know. Everybody enjoys the "you are so good" blah 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 blah. We can pretend that we don't, we can act like, oh, you know, this flattery, I don't really care, but you're totally getting off on it sometimes. And it's not getting off in a weird selfish ego way, but it's like, it makes you feel good, it makes you feel validated that whatever you're putting your energy for, other humans you may like acknowledge it and say, wow, that was awesome. It's silly, you know, it may be silly ego, but still, that's life. And it's,
and when you get around somebody who really, really loves you, you just want to be around them all the time.
Of course.
Because that feeling of being around them is like the same feeling you get when you find a heater when it's really cold outside.
It gives
you this sense of like, okay, I've found homeostasis here. This is what it's all about. Just this feeling.
Yep.
That feeling is the greatest feeling.
Absolutely. It's as good as it gets. That's part of the being in love experience. It's not just them adoring you or worshiping you. That's sort of the ego part. But then the whole thing is based on this exchange of energy where you can't get enough of the other person. They can't get enough of you. And you're like, fuck, this feels so good. I can't believe this.
Yeah. And that goes against everything that we've been taught in capitalism, or in I'm sorry, not capitalism, that's a materialism. Mm-hmm. Materialists are people who think that you get that same feeling from buying stuff.
Yeah.
Like a car, jewels, a nice house.
Of course.
You name it. There's all kinds of people who go running to the world trying to get that feeling. It's so frustrating because you can only get that feeling from another person.
Right.
And you can't make a person feel like that.
That's why there's that vicious cycle that works like clockwork in our society, where people are lonely and miserable because they work too hard, they don't have time and energy to put into building huge, good relationships. Because then you're lonely and miserable, but at least you have some money. What do? You go yourself and you buy yourself something cool to feel a little better about your shitty life. So then for a while you have your new toy and you're like, oh, this is so cool, this is fun, I get to play with my thing. By now you have spent money, which means that you need to work even harder at the job you hate, which then makes you even more lonely and miserable, which makes you more likely to want to buy something to feel a little better about your shitty life.
Yeah.
And it keeps going and going and going forever, right? In this perfect misery spiral that's not fun.
It's amazing because there's somebody at the end of that game, that misery spiral, who's probably well aware that you can make humans do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the same way, if I take my dog's toy, I can make him run in circles after the toy until he gets dizzy.
Right.
And it's fucking hilarious.
Yep. I think somebody's doing that to a lot of people right now.
Yeah. It's almost like humans are turbines and you can make them spin in this materialistic frenzy. And if you get enough humans spinning in the materialistic frenzy, then it will fucking power your empire. It will power your, this, whatever you want. The energy, that's how you generate energy from humans.
Right.
Is you get them to run after matter. You get them to chase after material things because they think the material things will give them the feeling of love.
Absolutely. That's like the Matrix, except you have them running so they sweat more. The Matrix with more sweat. That's what they're describing.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
But yeah, it's the reality is that most human beings, and all of us at one point or another, and most human beings a lot of the time, are so easy to manipulate. You know, if you really want to be the evil, fucked up one who's like trying to screw over everyone else and just get what you want out of them, it's really not that hard to do.
No.
It's the, because we are so, we have all these buttons that you can push and we automatically respond if you push it the right way. And so you already can predict, oh, if I do this, this person is going to respond this way. I'm going to get them to have this emotion, which is going to make that, it's not that hard. It's fucked up, but it's...
It's not that hard.
Right.
And it makes sense. Some, it does make sense that there would be people who figured this out and decided to capitalize off of it. And that certainly makes sense, doesn't it? It doesn't seem crazy to think about that.
What, did you ever read the 48 Laws of Power?
Yeah, right.
He made bank with it because what he's describing is not a crazy scenario. I mean, he's having fun playing bad boy with that.
Yes.
But the reality is he's describing the way things are a lot of the time. Now, not everybody's conscious of it. Not everybody's intentionally applying all of those things. But a lot of that stuff, that's why he resonated with people, because it's how it is.
This, he was trying to be Machiavelli.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was, you know, part of it, he was, I think there's an element of salesmanship there that is like, it makes you, makes it more controversial if you state it without any moral judgment whatsoever, just stating it exactly for what it is in this semi-Machiavellian type of way. I actually had Robert Greene on my podcast. I haven't released the episode yet, but I did interview him. He's a really nice guy, you know, when you interact with him.
Sure.
But he's just saying, look, this is the way things are. Learn about it. How you're going to use these ideas, fucking up to you.
You know?
If you want to be a power manipulating guy, you do that. If you want to use that just to make sure other people don't use it on you, great. But he's removing the moral aspect of it. He's like, I'm teaching you. To me, the way I conceive of it is like being a martial art teacher. You know, this is how you pop the elbow. This is how you, you know, doesn't mean you go out and do it on the old lady. It means these are the tools. How you use them, that's your choice.
Why do you think people have such a problem with the rules being laid out instead of being subtle or subconscious? Like, people get mad about, like... I actually am not fond of this type of literature. It just seems annoying. But like pickup artist literature, Machiavelli, The Prince, The Laws of Power, anything that involves just putting down clearly one specific type of social dynamic, that being control dynamics or being how to manipulate other people, it just does have this whiff of evil to it. Like, you're not supposed to say it.
Right.
Why?
And, well, I mean, there are two levels. One is some of the way these things can be used are objectively fucked up, right? There are just something that's manipulative and evil about it.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it's like fighting. You can be use a fighting techniques to rob an old lady, which means you're an evil, fucked up human being. You can use fighting techniques for complete, you know, the techniques are what they are, but there's no morality attached to them. It's the context in which you choose to use them, how you choose to use them, and all of that. In some cases, it's obvious that the whole purpose is manipulative. Like the whole thing about how to essentially approaching dating as a...
hunting.
Yeah, mark your victim kind of thing. He's like, what kind of a sick motherfucker are you? Really? Yeah. That's how you approach things? Jesus. That's why people should enjoy the flashlight more, so that when they actually choose to go for a human being, they do so because they want to, because they like that person. You know?
Well, doesn't it seem like it's kind of the pickup artist thing is the end product that they're going for generally seems to be fucking.
Yeah.
So that's the end product, is just fucking somebody. So you're like sort of like you've sort of abandoned even honesty. Like a lot of them carry rings around and give rings out to girls,
right.
And will try to convey this false persona or it all misdirects with the intention of getting to a position where you are fucking a girl among many girls that you're fucking. So there's that. It's like a whole culture of like, you're doing great in life if you're fucking a lot of girls. Like, it goes all the way back to Happy Days. Yeah. Remember the Fonz? They're like chicks falling all over him, man. He'd like in his apartment, there'd be five girls rolling down the steps. And it's like this kind of like cartoonish reductionist thing where these aren't – whoever these girls are that the Fonz was fucking, they're like basically walking – daisies. They don't have a nervous system even. They're just some kind of like flowery, cartoony thing that likes to suck the Fonz's cock and then vanishes into nothingness.
Basically,
they don't spend the next like 3 hours, you know, with the taste of the Fonz's cock in their mouth, thinking about how that, like, wondering if, like, if anyone's really gonna love them or any kind of like any of the true human emotions that overcome a living thing in this universe. That's not there,
right?
And that kind of seems like the pickup artist.
Yeah, that's what they go for. It's the way I can scam you out of the human aspect, and I'll just get what I want and get out. And which is like, that's so fucked up to me. He's like, he's so beyond the... It's not even that I don't understand it. It's that it flat out enrages me. It pisses me off, that thing. I find it... I don't know. To me, it's like, you say, you need sex. Good, I get it. No problem. And you got tired of your own sweet self. Okay, I get that too. I understand. The flashlight has been used too many times. You know, I get all that part. That's what good, old-fashioned legal prostitution should be about. You are in very pleasant fashion, in very polite fashion. You put the money down. They trade sex for money.
Yes.
You treat them nicely. They treat you nicely. Everybody got what they want. Nobody gets emotionally fucked over. Simple. Instead, the whole thing that... The whole idea of, no, I'm just going to go out. That's why, to me, like, the dating scene is a scary, weird place in that regard. Because I find it too many emotional games. Like, at the end of the day, I don't fucking want to have hurt anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't want anyone in the world to have that, shit, they let me down, basically. They hurt me. They have done some of that. It's like, that's a feeling. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a moral thing or not. It's just, to me, it feels too horrible to even conceive. I just don't like that feeling. So maybe for selfish reason, but to me, it's like, I never want to be in that position. To the point where sometimes I've done some really weird shit, because I've had a situation where I think a girl is hot, totally coming on to me. I still don't act on it. They start putting up signs, basically saying, please, come on now, you know, and I'm still like, she's hot, she's into me, and I really like her. Yeah, I don't want to have anything to do with her. And I'm like, why are you crazy, motherfucker? It's like, well, because I'm not exactly sure, you know, maybe I end up hurting. No, thanks. No thanks.
Right.
So I go a little overboard the other direction. That's why the whole people don't even come close to that, go completely the other way, and they are about really just screwing people over, knowing that they are emotionally hurting people. That rubs me beyond wrong.
Yeah, they're doing it, but I think it's more of a blundering mistake. It's like, it's not as though, I know there's some guys, like, definitely there's some guys who went through a famine when they were in high school. Sure. Like, a lot of guys didn't have sex, and they watched, like, total assholes get, you know, fuck all the time. And then, you know, they started fostering this resentment that, and then, like, when they got into their 20s, maybe physically they changed and became a little more attractive, or who knows what.
Right.
And so, now they're... At their core, they've got this sort of like anger.
Yeah.
And so then they're just trying to exact revenge on women because they feel like they were jilted. And I think that that's a small – it's a population, but I think it's a small part of the population. It seems more like there's a blundering error, a kind of blindness that they don't that a lot of people don't understand, that where they're digging for water, they're – that's not water that they're getting. That's sewage. But they haven't really tasted water, so they're fine drinking polluted, murky shit water.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of evil in the world is not done by people who are the stereotypical evil dude who's out there to, ha, 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 how am I going to spread evil today?
Right.
It's done by people who are... stupid, I guess. And stupid, I mean, not in a way like they are born that way or they are stupid in every aspect of their life. Stupid about specific issues because they don't know any better. Because they have, as you put it, never experienced anything, that's like, wow, that feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So they go for this like very, 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 very cheapened version of the real thing that completely perverts what the real thing should be about.
That's it. That's it. So they're like these blind, stumbling, like fools. They're just these weird leeches sort of like crawling along the surface of the material universe, sucking at anything that has just the smallest bit of energy in it, because they don't realize that there's like a more profound experience. Mm-hmm. I think that's got to be it. That's my view of the thing. Most people don't get it. You know, when we were just in New Orleans, and this cab driver, you know, we were trying to get to some restaurant, and we got in a cab, and I watched the cab driver intentionally drive us around the same block a couple of times.
Right.
And he was like, he was saying, he kept asking us the address, and I'm watching him and I'm thinking, oh, okay, you're like ripping us off right now.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it's like, oh, whatever. It's going to be like, honestly, it's going to be $8 where we're going. So let's just watch this guy go through this process of stealing from the world.
To make it to $11.
Yeah.
Right.
And let's just see what he does, because it'll be curious. And you can watch his face, and you can kind of see he's getting off on it a little bit. There's a little bit of like getting off on it. And then when we got out of the cab, you can kind of see that the guy feels clever too. You know, when we got out, I'm like, he's stupid, because like I like giving big tips to cab drivers. So I would have given him more than what he got from ripping us off anyway.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know that. And he just thinks we're stupid tourists, and that's fine. But it's just curious to watch the whole process unfold in a person who is trying to rip someone off, because you could see they're not really that kind of happiness that they're getting is like not real happiness.
No.
It's this kind of shade of happiness, but it's not like the real joy that you can get from giving up trying to win.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of the buying yourself something cool because you're lonely and miserable. You know, is that you're giving yourself this micro satisfaction because you don't fucking know what you're missing or the real satisfaction is. And it's, when you think about it, it's the same in every department, right? When you look at how horrendously bad we're fucking up the world right now in terms of environment, because somebody has to squeeze the resources out of it to have some more money, polluting their own fucking surroundings. I mean, what animal is that stupid to poison the air they breathe and the water they drink? You know, it's just demented, but it's like, I'm going to squeeze another high-rise building that I'm going to buy thanks to this. And it's like, again, misguided priorities, to say the least. And those are the ones that create evil. You know, the intention may not be, your deep-seated persona may not be the ultimate evil, but you end up, because of misguided priorities, committing a lot of evil.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, Jesus, what a waste.
Yeah, what a waste. Yeah. What a waste, because you're sort of, when you get anything in mass, so it's like you get these little pixels of evil or whatever you want to call it, selfishness, delusion, and each of those pixels is a person who in their specific career or business is trying to take more than they give.
Yep.
And their philosophy is that the way they're going to take more is by deception.
Yep.
So you get this one little pixel of deception here and another pixel of deception there, another pixel of deception there. But in mass, that is where you could see the personification of this selfish force.
Yep.
And it's always destructive.
Yep.
So that's where you know, that's where you can see there's some logic behind people saying that there is a thing called Lucifer, Satan, devil, the worm, you know, whatever the name is you want to give to the force that ultimately is only interested in itself. Each pixel of the thing can look quite glamorous. You see a yacht, you see a, you know, a life where a person is so cultured and sophisticated and has the resources to do whatever he wants. And the pixel looks great.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you look at the thing in total, you just see swampy suction. You just see the collapse of rainforests. You see people in China not able to fucking see their hands in front of their face because of the pollution.
Yep.
You see, you know, in the United States, you see the government that's collapsing because the representatives are all paid off. And in mass, you can see, oh, wow, this is a multi-tentacled, super destructive entity that is rending the planet to shreds.
Yep.
And so that now if you look at the other side, the pixels of people like, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, Ram Dass, any of the great teachers or any of the great people who've surrendered that desire for their own self. If you see, imagine what the world would be like if that was the majority.
Right. Yeah, whole different game.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Now it's heaven.
Right.
It would be the Garden of Eden.
Right.
We'd be existing on a paradise planet. It would just be beautiful, luxurious gardens and forests that were flourishing. And, you know, there would be, you know what, we can't even fucking imagine what it'd be like.
Yeah, because, I mean, we are really freaking smart monkeys. We have the technological abilities to make something amazing in the world today. And because we're fucking idiots, you know, we're smart and we're stupid at the same time. We're smart in terms of the device that we come up with. We're stupid in terms that we don't know how to use them in a way that increases happiness. But it really boils down to the fact that most people, I would even dare to say everybody in the world, to some degree or another, has to learn to be happy. Because I think there is a basic key to happiness, but, you know, it comes and goes. It's very real, it's very sincere, it's very innocent, but it comes and goes because kids are rocked by their emotion back and forth. But the idea of adults being able to know what it is that makes them happy, what both in terms of what activities make them happy, what how to make themselves happy, that to me is like the ultimate art that life is all about. You know, if you can learn, if you can master that art, you're in heaven, whatever you do.
What's
you
your know? Technique?
One thing that I find useful, and one thing that I would suggest for as a starter for anybody, is to keep, you know, a computer file, a journal, or whatever, some piece of either paper or file somewhere that exists where you write down, anytime comes to mind, you write down all the things that make you happy. And it can be like some that may be stuff you want to learn about, some may be things that currently you enjoy a lot. So, you know, it's like, I want to freaking learn how to start a fire in a forest. Okay, that may not be super high on your priorities of that makes me crazy happy, but you write everything, right? And after a while, when you do that for a while, I think you start seeing patterns of a certain kind of, oh, it clearly emerges here that I have a big relationship with my body. And activities that involve the physical body and sweating and these really help me a bunch, because now I see a whole list of them. Maybe I should figure out how to structure my life to put more time in that, because it seems to pay off. Or, I didn't even realize it, but nature seems to come up over and over again. I need to fucking garden. I need to do something that puts me in touch with it on a daily basis. And maybe you even figure out what the hell to do in life as something that can actually pay you to do something you enjoy. Or maybe it's not, but you figure out more the, you know, a lot of people, when they have free time, they don't know what the fuck to do with it. Because they are so used to having every minute of their life taken up that is like, shit, now I can do whatever I want. I want to do is, oh shit, I don't remember what it means, what it means to be me, you know?
Yeah.
So in that sense, even if you don't change your life dramatically, you at least, you can't even get enough hours in the day because there are so many things that excite you, that you want to jump on, that you want to have time for, you can never be bored. You're always, in that sense, every second that's not taken up by work, you're having fun. You're doing something that's feeding you. And if you do that, you're going to be way less likely to want to screw everyone over in order to get something out of them, to fuck up the planet, because you need to feel some, because you're never happy. And so the only way you see you can become happy is look at your bank account, add numbers, and that's happiness.
Right.
You know, if you actually figure out ways to be happy, I would say that you're probably way less likely to dedicate time to being an asshole.
And also, you're going to find what you really are along that path.
Yep.
And that's going to be the thing that turns into whatever your job is.
Yep.
I mean, look at the way we start. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I swear, it almost seems like a super advanced intelligence encoded within the very formation of life on this earth. The code, the secret of happiness, as we call it. If you look at sperm, these poor little blind wormy things,
right?
They get blasted out of a cock in a moment of supreme bliss, ultimate happiness. The person might have been the biggest asshole on earth, but at least for those few seconds of orgasm,
right,
that person had joined with the universal love flow of the universe, or the source of all pleasure in the universe, and had become an orgasm.
Right.
So that's what you come from. And then you're this blind little wormy thing that is following a kind of chemical scent, right? Mm-hmm. You're following this chemical scent to get to an egg, and then no one taught this. Sperm didn't take like sperm class. There weren't lectures and lessons. There was no military base where they were training.
You drilled the operations.
You will get to that egg. You will follow this scent. You will be the first. It's just blundering but moving in the direction. It doesn't know what it's doing exactly. Right. But man, if it really tunes in, then it will transform from a wormy little thing to a fucking human being.
Right.
No, but if people didn't know sperm existed and you pointed to a human and said that used to be half of that used to be a little worm,
right?
That's impossible.
Yep.
So in the same way, it's like this is why I love in Christianity a lot of those different spiritualities, even in Hinduism, when before you read the Bhagavad Gita, a prayer that you say is, "I was born in the darkest of ignorance, mm-hmm. but my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torch of knowledge." It's this idea of blindness, complete mm-hmm. supreme blindness.
Right.
So what you're saying, writing down things that you enjoy, that whatever that is, that impulse is the same impulse that when you were a tiny microscopic sperm drove you in the direction of an egg that transformed you into a thing
right.
so much more powerful and superior to a sperm that you don't even it's like two completely different things.
Right.
So in the same way, you follow those little breadcrumbs that you're talking about, as silly as they might seem.
Sure.
Learning to build a fire, which isn't that silly, it's an important thing, but whatever it is, you follow those breadcrumbs, and then the next thing you know, somewhere along that path, you're going to accidentally stumble upon a book.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what the book's going to be? Or maybe you're going to stumble upon a person. Because when you start going in the direction of happiness, you're going to start finding yourself around other people who are also moving in this direction.
Yep.
And people who are going in the direction of happiness tend to want to help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, you start learning things.
Yep.
And that's how you have the potential to transform into a thing completely brand new.
Yep. Big time.
Which is why, you always hear in Christianity the term born again.
Yeah, that's right.
And unfortunately, it's been blasphemed. Right. When you see a lot of these people who say they've been born again, it's like, well, you got born the second time. You were born with serious fucking disabilities, man.
If this is your second time, I hate to see what the first one was.
Yeah, what, you used to be an alligator? But, of course, as with all world religions and all religions, they get completely corrupted, destroyed by idiots. But it's not just that. It's even in my friend Emil likes this, has told me this story about how in Taoism, somebody asked this guy how old he was, and he would say, 4. Mm-hmm. I'm 4. This is probably a guy in his 40s,
right.
But he would say, I'm 4. And the reason he said 4 is because he didn't consider himself to be alive prior to his moment of awakening.
What he was
before that was a completely different unconscious impulse thing, just like a sperm.
Right.
That's why I love that idea. It's such a beautiful idea to think that just through following your own impulses towards mm-hmm. happiness, you can at the other side of that not just learn how to build a fire, but transform into something so different than what you are right now that you will not even be recognizable. You'll look back at your old life and think, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, you feel sad. You're like, shit, was I really living that way? Was I not only living, did I really feel that way? Ooh, damn. You feel like, oh, I wish I could go back in time and give you a different perspective earlier,
It's yes.
Because, ultimately, that's how it goes. That's why most people, they pick up a job they hate. They don't hate it so much that they actually want to change it, but, mildly miserable, or Freud would put it, normally miserable, right? That was the whole goal of psychoanalysis, to make you normally miserable. It's like the most people, they go through that thing and then they finish their job. And by the time all this energy has been sucked out of them with no fun whatsoever, and you do this long enough, you don't really know what the hell to do to be happy when you are free, actually, when you have your free time. So you just go home, watch some TV, watch some Jerry Springer again, you know, and it's like you start moving from, you're really just taking up time so that soon enough, eventually you'll die. But, you know, you're not really there in the process. You're just being this machine that goes from the TV set to some job you don't like, back and forth, without any... And I mean, the job thing is like, granted, sometime you need to pay the bills, you need to pick up shitty jobs, and maybe it's even hard to find something that you really deeply enjoy that pays long term. I get it. But then that's like 8-9 hours of the day. There's still another probably 8 hours before you go to bed. What the fuck are you going to do with that time? You know, how are you going to put the energy there if you are not able to figure out a way to fix the job sort part?
Well, you could do, I mean, the job part or whatever the part is that sucks. Actually, the part that sucks, you know, actually in the Walking Dead.
Greatest thing ever.
Greatest thing ever. There was a quick scene. There was a poster on the wall behind one of the characters and the poster. And I'd never heard this phrase before, but it was something like, "Calm seas do not great sailors make." And I thought it was so, you know, so, nice. So like, so the, instead of thinking, okay, about the peaceful times when you don't have anything to do and you're not being oppressed or you're not in the situation that's triggering your anger, or sadness or whatever it is. No, it's those, it's the situations that are triggering the unhappy emotions. Those are that's the dojo.
Yep.
That's the training cathedral,
right,
where the universe is like giving you this training, and the all you, my understanding of it is that all you have to do is make a simple shift from being in the misery to watching yourself be in the misery.
Yep.
Be attentive to the emotions rising to the surface as you go through your day. You don't have to change anything, and watch the way you act. Just watch. It's really fucking fun. Sit on the bleachers and watch the lumbering golem that you've become trample through the cities of your life again and again and again.
Precious.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Watch it. Watch it get angry. Watch it get greedy. Watch it punish. Watch it get revenge. Watch it. Just watch. Right. You don't even have to change. Right. Yet somehow, from just this watching, the thing will begin to change on its own.
Yeah.
It'll just start shifting naturally away from anger, away from punishing. And that's where shit gets interesting, man.
Absolutely. I mean, mindfulness in that sense is like working out. It's not rocket science. It's not that complicated, as you say. It's a matter of the first step is you just watch how you react, how external stimuli hit you and how you respond, you know. And you don't do anything else. It's not all it is damn discipline, right? You just have to stay with it throughout the day. You don't have to be brilliant. You don't have to be a genius. You just have to have stamina of sticking with the practice.
You won't stay with it. And that's the other fun part is you'll fall out of it.
Sure.
You'll go into it's no different than an alcoholic blackout, because you'll be in this mindful place. And then 2 days later, you'll come back to mindfulness again. And guaranteed in those 2 days, you'll look back and think, oh, God, some smoldering fucking mess will be left behind when you fell back into pure... habituation with no awareness.
You know, it happens to me a lot lately. Well, in this sense, my daughter is 4 years old now, and that happens a lot with her, where she'll do something, and she's actually a really good girl. She's really, really nice, but she's, you know, a 4 year old girl. That means, you know, willful and, oh shit, I spilled the milk, and, you know, all little things that are difficult throughout the day. And every time, you know, when 30 of those things have added up together, suddenly I see that one more thing that touches me and I'm just like, God damn it, fucking this. And the next second, you know, when you see her face got all sad and you're like, wait, did I just yell at a 4-year-old girl because she spilled her milk?
Yes.
What the fuck is wrong with me? You know, and instantly you switch, you go to this other place where you're like, oh, fuck, I can't believe I was that person.
Yeah.
2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you watch that. And now you've got the cycle.
Right.
Because if you watch... So you watch the, like, anger come out. You watch the trigger. And no matter what you do, you know, when you start working on this shit, you will get really puffed up. And you'll start thinking, like, I'm the Dalai Lama. I'm totally, I guess that'll be the last time I get angry in this incarnation. And then, like, you know, within seconds, or hours, a day, who knows, someone will say just the right wrong thing to you.
Oh, yeah.
And bam, yep. You're back in fucking defensive posturing, puffed up, martyrdom, whatever the fucking thing is, where you feel like you have the right,
right.
to viciously, brutally attack somebody, and you're justified in doing it for sure. You're always justified,
of
man.
Course.
They fucked up. Really? This time? This is what you're going to do to me?
Yeah, yeah,
always
yeah.
like that. Yeah. Always in the... You're always in the right. And then after you've fucking done the thumbs down to the gladiator in the arena and they've decapitated him and you get to watch the blood gush out of his neck, the anger fades away and all that's left is you are a fucking... shitty emperor staring down at a decapitated hero,
right.
and you've done nothing
yep.
except continue this endless cycle of violence that exists in the universe, which is the creates that thing we were talking about
right.
earlier, which you're just a pixel in an image of horror.
Right.
So it's like it's really fucking cool to watch the guilt part of the cycle too. Because that's just the other side of the coin
sure.
of the anger.
Yeah.
The guilt and the anger are all different representations of an internal structure that already exists inside of you. And by watching that internal structure, by giving it attention, once that begins to shift.
You know, the guilt moment, even though I hate the word guilt and I think that guiltiness is like a stupid emotion to indulge in for too long, there's an element of it that's actually good. Because there's something about that moment where you feel like, it's not about beating yourself up for the way you have been the
yeah.
previous minutes or days or whatever. It's about feeling, I don't want to be that way anymore.
Right.
You know, having that moment where it may help you remember the next time
yes.
when you're about to blow and you're like, oh, I remember this pattern, and I was not particularly thrilled with the person I was once I went down this route. So
yes.
how about I don't, you know?
Yes.
And you just take a deep breath, and you're like, okay, I can actually handle this. I can do this, and it feels fucking good. You feel like there's something about the way you're responding that you find healthier, gives you more satisfaction. It doesn't traumatize people around you, and you're, you know, things are flowing. It's, again, that's to me, that's an art. That's the ultimate art.
Yeah, man, it is the ultimate art. I think it is the ultimate art because if you can succeed in this endeavor by, you know, habitually achieving mindfulness when the anger comes, then you'll start getting triggered less because adopt a dog.
Mm-hmm.
Go adopt a shitty dog. Go adopt a dog that's been in a rescue,
right.
has been kicked, abandoned, malnourished, bring the dog to your house and you will see that you have a scared creature that if you get too close to it at the wrong time, it might growl at
yep.
you. It might even bite you.
Right.
And but if you give that creature love and structure, but love, man, 2 months down the road, you are now living with something out of a Disney cartoon.
Right.
Just this sweet, beautiful, creature that looks at you as though you were Zeus or something.
Right.
So what you've done there is you've put your attention on, you've given a being loving attention. And the effect of loving attention is that it transforms things
mm-hmm.
that are out of balance to things that are in balance, or
absolutely.
Things that are out of harmony into things. Now, when you realize that you've got a rescue dog living inside of you, that's been beaten
mm-hmm.
and malnourished. Sure, I don't care. Maybe you're some middle class, upper class
sure.
kid who had all the fucking pasta and bologna and everything you wanted slung at your ass. Guaranteed, in some other way,
yep.
you are malnourished. Who knows how? Everyone.
Yep.
So we've all got this little fucking rescue dog. You start applying mindfulness to that freaked out little fucked up
mm-hmm.
mutt, and the same thing happens inside of you that happened outside of you with that dog.
Right.
Now this thing inside of you that used to be the cancerous monster of your life, bulldozing through relationships like Palestinian villages.
Nice.
Suddenly that fucking thing turns into this super powerful sweetness that...
Right.
Right, and then the next thing you know is that thing starts shining out of you
mm-hmm.
onto other people.
Yep.
And
yep.
then the people yep. around you are like, wait a minute.
Yeah, make a big difference that way. You really do. You can have, that's the place where individual power comes in, where you can make a difference in your environment, in the people you interact with on a day-to-day basis. And it people feel it, people sometimes respond to it, sometimes stay with them or give them an idea of something to work on. It's awesome. It's as good as it gets. Now, the part that to me is, one thing that's a trap is when people go that path of mindfulness, which is a great first step,
yeah,
and they learn the, oh, I shouldn't react. I should be taking it in the best possible way. And that's not mindfulness anymore, because what they are doing is they are applying a dogma to no matter what they feel. You know, when you see,
yes,
especially with a lot of passive-aggressive people, that they will know better than to blow up. But you know that behind that facade, they always smile, always respond with the, oh, yeah, it's very interesting that you feel that way. There's something, yeah, there that's just like... So what I dig is people who can have strong emotions that rock them, not this passive weird stuff, but you have that feeling and sometimes you're like, I'm just going to punch through this wall right now. And at that moment, they have the mindfulness to choose, which 99% of the time, if you have the mindfulness, you're going to choose not to blow up and go crazy and do weird stuff. And you're just going to go... And then there will be the one time where like, okay, I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not hurting anybody else. Fuck. Just to remember what it's like, let's go down that path. You know, you choose,
yes,
to do the wrong thing.
Fuck yeah.
Kind of like you choose to let the cab driver do his thing. You know, there's a choice there where you are not just the victim of circumstances, but you're deciding which path you want to go.
That's why you need good friends.
No.
Because you want to be around friends who are going to let you go into a seizure of anger and be a fucking asshole for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And at the other end of it, you want to be around friends who are like, oh, welcome back.
Right.
Yeah, you freaked the fuck out, huh?
Yeah,
no problem. I forgive you.
Right.
And now it's like, okay, cool, great. I can freak out around you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I can freak out around you. And because you want, you're going to freak the fuck out. And you're exactly right, man. The whole other side where it's like, now you're just like some bullshit smiling sunbeam. You're like a walking Yellowstone National Park. You're like this beautiful thing that underneath it is the potential energy to cause the next fucking apocalypse,
yeah,
from that pool of magma under Yellowstone.
Yep.
Yeah. No, you don't want that.
No.
You want to be able to vent.
Yep.
You got to deal with that fucking magma bed underneath you, not by ignoring it, but also not by like letting it all come out in one catastrophic explosion. You want to simultaneously cool that thing, and when the thing does blast, make sure the blasts aren't so tremendous that you're at a shopping mall coming to yourself and you realize you just gunned down five strangers because,
yeah,
that's the far end of the scale.
That's a bad day, yes.
Or another version, you know, I just saw this video that to me really sums up the importance of mindfulness and not being overcome by your anger. Have you seen the video of the guy working late and the woman's vacuuming?
No.
Oh my God, man. So this guy's working at a desk. He's like clearly stressed out. He's working like, who knows what's happened. He's in an office. The maid is vacuuming. The
yeah,
maintenance lady's vacuuming. He grabs a pair of scissors and cuts the cord of the vacuum cleaner with the scissors and electrocutes himself. So he's like trying to cut the cord of the vacuum cleaner because he's lost control. Lights dim in the building. You see his body,
right,
convulse because he's being electrocuted, and then, you know, he's probably dead.
Right.
So it's
Jesus.
Yeah. So you see, like, okay, well, like, you know, generally when we lose our cool, you end up with like an unhappy 3-year-old.
Right.
Or you end up with a girlfriend who is like sad for a day.
Right.
But sometimes you lose control and you die.
That's why road rage is scary, because that's,
yes,
where the odds are that things can get really out of control. It's like, doesn't fucking matter who cuts you off, doesn't matter anything. The more you give in to the rage, the more likely you are the one who end up the victim of the whole thing. And it's like you're not punishing anybody by getting angry. You're punishing yourself by letting somebody else get you angry.
You always end up the victim,
yeah,
of the thing.
Absolutely.
No question.
Yeah.
If anger gets triggered inside of you, it doesn't... Let's say anger gets triggered inside of you because somebody walks up to you on the street and throws water in your child's face.
Right.
Okay. Now, this is a situation that needs to be dealt with.
Sure.
You know, you're not just going to sit and smile at the guy in some sweet sunbeam way.
Yeah, and tell him, oh, you know, everything is for the best. You just, my dear son, you just need to look at it in a different direction. It's like, fuck you already.
So, but if the anger explodes inside of you, and the fury and the rage, the poison comes back. Yeah. It's really, it doesn't come back. It's always there.
Right.
But when the clouds part and reveal the eye of Sauron inside of you again, and the thing possesses you, now there's a double problem.
Right.
Now not only has your daughter had water thrown in her face by some weirdo, I don't know who this person is in the story, but now you're possessed by Satan. Yeah. Now you're possessed by the id.
Right.
So now you've got two problems. And then the third problem comes when you start slamming the person's head into the concrete in front of your daughter.
Right.
Because now your daughter is witnessing the way that you're supposed to act when shit goes ultimately wrong.
Right.
So now you're teaching your daughter violence is the answer.
Right.
And now here's a fourth thing. After the guy has his seizure from the massive head injury that you've given him, you lose your daughter to the state.
Of course. Because
you're going to jail or who knows what.
Right.
So you see the moment anger steps into the picture, everything goes haywire.
Yep.
You lose automatically.
Yep.
But if you keep that's why I think martial arts are cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they teach you to keep your cool and then make your decision from that POV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that decision that you make is always going to be better than the decision you make when you're fucked up and furious.
Because it's not a decision. You know, you're just responding and it's not a decision otherwise. There really is something about being in a place where you get to choose how you respond.
Yes.
That's a decision. If it's just somebody touch you one way and you immediately respond another way, there's no choice there. It's automatic pilot. But that's why sometimes I dig the guys, like when you were mentioning earlier some of sort of the big figures of inspirational. Clearly, some of those are amazing, no doubt about it. But there's something I dig about the figures. You know, compare a Martin Luther King, who's clearly, you know, awesome in a lot of ways, no doubt about that.
Sure.
And yet there's that, you know, I'm going to go to hookers all the time, but I have to hide it because my public image is, there's that. Versus, you know, the guys, the people who have that amazing mindfulness, but at the same time, they're not goody-goody. And they are going to enjoy life in ways that they never get to hurt anybody, but they are definitely questionable in terms of morality, or some people would feel like, you know, you're so spiritual, you're not supposed to fucking be wasted on sake right now. What's wrong with you? And it's like that ability to mix both, to mix, you know, a good, honest, stupid, human, earthy aspect to yourself without letting them run you over and having a mindfulness about it. That to me is where it's interesting. Because otherwise I feel like one is turning into a stereotype. You know, I'm going to be the saint with white clothes who say always the wise deep thing. It's like, you're a fortune cookie. You're not somebody who's enlightened. You're becoming something else. You're this living stereotype of what enlightenment is like.
Yeah, right. And when you look at the foundation of all these great religions, you find that in the chain of disciplic succession, there is always a guy covered in mud beating people who is the progenitor of the thing. It's never like someone in white robes. It's always someone who's like gone absolutely batshit crazy, is mad or seems mad but isn't mad.
Right.
Because what is going on with it? If you look at the earth, if you look at like the universe, the universe is batshit crazy. It's not some white robe thing.
No.
It's exploding stars that are turning into pigs.
Yeah.
It's like this thing's lost its mind. What's it doing? It's like blowing people out of planets.
Right.
It's like creating black holes that are sucking matter into we don't even know where. And it's apparently infinite.
And it's waking me up to tell me to have a podcast with you or it will implode. What the fuck? What a drama queen, you know?
And to think that something that's going to really be close to that and is representing that, it's going to be all smiles and sweetness and love or even consistent is lunacy.
Yeah.
Fuck no, that thing's going to get hookers from time to time and that thing's going to do whatever it wants to do.
Proudly, right.
Proudly or not proudly or ashamed. You know, this is the this Chogyam Trungpa book talks about the history of the school of Tibetan Buddhism that he practices. Wish I could remember the name. I can't. But it's like people would leave Tibet to try to gather information about Buddhism. And this story is, I can't remember the guy who brought this specific form of Buddhism back to Tibet. Sorry, people who know. But he basically was searching and searching to try to find a true teacher of Buddhism, someone who really understood it. And he caught wind that there was a guy who was like a saint who had achieved realization. And he went into this village where they said he was, and he was asking people the person's name. I wish I could remember the guy's name. Maybe it was Tilopa or something.
Tilapa, yeah.
You know about this.
Of course, right.
Tilapa.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know about any saint, but there's a guy who like is down, who like eats discarded fish the river. You can go talk to that guy.
Right.
And that guy's just this like filthy homeless person. He's like a pig. And this guy's journeyed so far to find that freak. And it, you know, the story then.
Remind me a little, because I read some Tilapa stuff, but remind me the encounter.
The story is that he ends up, maybe the guy who went to visit him, his name's Marpa, perhaps. I'm not sure. But the Tilapa ends up, you know, he wants this guy to, I don't think he even talks to the guy, or he says, fine, just follow me around. But it's like, He has the guy go bring him some soup. Mm-hmm. He has him go steal soup from a wedding.
Right.
And he's telling him to go steal. The guy steals soup, brings it back to him, gives him the soup. And he said that's the first time he saw Tilapa smile. And the whole time he'd been with him, he's like, this is good soup. Would you go get me some more? And so he goes to get him more soup. And then they catch the guy and beat the shit out of him. Apparently they break his legs and leave him laying in the mud. And then, like, a few days later, Tilapa finds him. He's like, where have you been? Where's my soup? And he's, like, lying there broken and sick. And it's just a series of, like, painful moments that ultimately lead to Tilapa slapping him with his across the face with his sandal. And he gets the transmission from that. Somehow from this like act of violence, he learns, and Tilapa says, that's all I can teach you.
Right.
And that's like one of the progenitors of Tibetan Buddhism.
No, that's hilarious.
The height of my teaching is to slap you with my sandal. See you later.
That's a tantric school, isn't it?
Yes. Tilapa.
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's what...
Yes, it is. But yeah, you're right, man. Because and again, it's like it helps. The lesson I get from that is I have to stop closing myself off to thinking that I'm only getting taught when I'm around people like, Ram Dass, or when I'm around people like, you know, who are very far along and have clearly disciplined. I have to stop thinking that and realize that if one of the founders of this school of Buddhism was a muddy guy who was like violent and disgusting, you could pass that guy 100 times on the street and never fucking know that you are passing a saint. So that's the idea, is to open yourself up to the possibility that the vehicle that is going to teach you is not going to look the way you think it's going to look.
Right. Because, I mean, ultimately, nobody teach you jack shit. Life teaches you. Or rather, life is life. It doesn't teach or wants to teach or doesn't give a fuck. Life is life. And you interacting with life, learn from life. As far as teaching you, it's up to you. It's like, you know, with every book that, like, one thing that happens anytime I wrote something is when people like it regularly, it's the fuck, these are exactly my thoughts expressed in a different way that clicks and jive in a way that, so it's not that you are making up something that nobody has ever thought of, it's just that you in that moment find a way that other people respond to. And that's what, you know, it's like, to me, that's why when we put too much the figure of the teacher on a pedestal, I feel like, look, they had their own shit. They still have their own shit. And as long as they are honest with it, then you can learn a lot from them. You can get a lot out of them. But this whole, you know, you are a saint above the clouds who never... It's like, to me, it stops being... I can't even learn from you at that point because it's not real. It's not like I haven't seen you, you know, drop the hot sauce on your foot and go, God damn it.
Yeah.
Then I know you're real. You know? Otherwise, you know, if you drop the hot sauce on your foot and you go like, huh, The me out there is experiencing pain right now, but I shouldn't react badly. I'm right. just gonna. It's like, come on, man. It's like it stopped for the way I'm made. You know, maybe somebody else can learn from that. I don't. I need to have the gritty, muddy aspect of it along with the beautiful, enlightened one. I can't have it separated.
Yeah, because you're so, yeah, because then you're just like, what game are you running on me, motherfucker? Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, like, I there's no way. I can remember once being in a, taking this class on religions when I was in college, and we went to all these different churches and synagogues. We went to a mosque, and we're sitting in the mosque, and the guy who's like teaching at the mosque, there a baby starts crying and screaming.
Right.
Screaming at the top of its lungs, crying and screaming. And the guy who's like teaching us about the mosque, he like stops and he's like, isn't that a beautiful sound? And that moment I stopped listening to him. It's like, no.
Motherfucker.
That's a fucking screaming, loud, annoying, obnoxious thing.
Yeah,
and I don't believe that you think that that's a beautiful sound.
Right.
I can believe that you could say, that's annoying, but we can learn patience from it.
Yeah, of course.
When you're trying to tell me that a screaming baby is a beautiful sound, if that was true, there'd be no humans on this planet because nobody'd be feeding babies. They'd just be using them as record players until they starve to death. Don't feed the baby. Right. It won't make that beautiful sound anymore.
No, I know. I know exactly what you mean. That stuff drives me nuts when people play this holier-than-thou kind of approach. It's just like, come on, man. Mainly it drives me nuts because it's not real. And it's another ego act, a bigger ego act than the ones that look like ego acts. Because one is being honest about it, and the other one is just trying to mask it in this. That's why, to me, the biggest, one of the healthiest spiritual steps is embracing being human, is being genuine, first and foremost, which doesn't mean being a robotic asshole who responds to everything, because that's, I don't even consider that genuine either. That's not being sincere, that's having no personality and no choice. To me, being genuine is having the mindfulness that allow you to make choices, but for the most part, choosing to go down a healthy path. And when you decide not to go down that path, it's because you do so in an environment that nobody's going to get hurt. And you're just doing it just to keep the energy moving.
Yes.
That, to me, is genuine. You know, you're embracing all of yourself without squashing some side. It's like, well, that doesn't fit my saintly image, so I'm just going to soberly disregard that part.
Right.
Fuck that. You know, if it's there, it's there. Play with it. Laugh at it. Maybe say, come on, I don't really want to go there a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, embracing it and acknowledging it, I think it keeps you for a real human being versus a stereotype of a human being.
Acknowledging it. That's all you got to do. Embrace it. Good fucking luck. But acknowledge it. Right. Start there. Maybe you'll begin to embrace it later down the line, you know, but at least just acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. That's all. Acknowledge the seizure. And acknowledge the fact that in the same way, if you put a strobe light in front of an epileptic, it's going to fall down, like it's not human. What am I, fucking Joseph Mengele or something? When you put a strobe light in front of an epileptic, he's going to fall down and have a seizure. In the same way, acknowledge that you're an epileptic when it comes to anger.
Right.
And only instead of strobe lights triggering the seizure of reactivity, it's assholes in traffic, selfish lovers, crappy bosses, whatever the fucking thing is, shitty politicians, bad weather, disease, whatever the thing is, just acknowledge that the strobe light is not the evil, or is when it comes to epilepsy, it's not the strobe light, it's something inside the epileptic's brain causing this reaction.
Yeah.
The idea being that in the epileptic, if there was some way to transform the epileptic's brain so that part was no longer affected by strobe lights, then strobe lights would become inconsequential to the epileptic.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, if you could change that internal part of yourself so that it no longer it causes you to have a seizure whenever anyone cuts you off in traffic or doesn't call you back or calls you too much or whatever, then you have cured yourself in a true way. And that's something that no fucking car, no TV, no house, no material thing, nothing outside of yourself can do.
Right, absolutely. That's why, in a sense, I wouldn't go as far as thanking all the assholes in your life. But in a way, they are still assholes, and that's why you're not going to thank them. But in a way, they are helping you because it's giving you opportunity over and over again to learn the game of how not to give in to anger, how not to react to every little thing. at least having a choice before you punch them. At least you choose to punch them as opposed to reacting.
Yes.
You know, that's each one is an opportunity to learn. That's why one game I always played as a kid, I would always imagine whatever insecurity I had, going down the list of all the possible ones, I would imagine people, either some that I would know, some that I wouldn't know, how they would just go poke at that aspect of me. And yes. Verbally, you know, kind of like when somebody's picking on you and they don't pick on you on, you know, if somebody tells you you are, and they tell something that is totally patently not true, doesn't even bug you that much. Because it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? That just doesn't touch me. But if they start picking on you on something that's true, where it is true that you're lacking in that department,
yeah,
even if you play that game in your head, you see your body start twitching and
yes.
getting all tense and getting ready to say, no, because you're not... Yeah. You're like, whoa, slow down. There's nobody really out there. It's all in your mind. It's nothing else. Why are you responding that way? You know,
yeah.
Isn't that just being a scared defense? You know, you're putting up defenses because you're freaked out because it's real.
Yes.
So if it's real, why don't you learn from it? And how can you respond to it in a healthier fashion? How can you, you know...
Isn't there a thing called a bot fly that lays shit in your head and it'll poke out of the hole sometimes?
I'm missing out on that. What's...
I can't remember what it is. There's some kind of parasite. That it's a really terrible parasite.
Right.
And it lays eggs inside of you. Mm-hmm. And so and the eggs grow into these like worms. And the worms, to get them out of your head... They've got to poke their heads out a little bit. And then when they poke their heads out, I think, I'm not positive about this. There might be another way you get them out. But I think you can grab them and you can yank them out.
Wow.
Right? So in the same way, that's what anger is. And so if you look at it like this is a parasitic energy living inside mm-hmm. of me. And it sometimes isn't ever, it's not even there. Like if you look at yourself, you can see like, oh, I'm just pretty blank right now. Or I feel happy. I don't yeah. feel it. But when the thing triggers it, it's like if you had a parasite in your head and you were using a little bit of steak to lure the parasite out to poke its head out so you could pull it out, mm-hmm. it would be like screaming at the steak when the parasite appears. Like, right. You steak, you're the reason this parasite's in my head.
Right?
It's like, no, forget yeah. the fucking steak.
Yep.
Deal with the parasite.
Yep.
And then when you deal with the parasite, then it's like, then you're free.
Absolutely.
That's freedom.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's freedom. I think that, you know, I love the Eastern versions of this shit because they say, and it's going to take you 16 million lifetimes
right.
to get rid of it.
But the beauty of it is that each step along the way feels a little better. So yes, you know, it may, if you focus on when do I gonna get to that place, it's like, fuck, you know. But the fact is, each time you do that, it feels a little better. It becomes a little easier. It becomes, so you get the rewards along the way. It's not just the big payoff at the end of it all, which makes the whole process more pleasant.
Yeah, man. And it's so, it really is. It's so cool. It makes you feel like you're leveling up in a dumb video game. Just the realization that you don't have to react to your anger.
Yeah.
Just that alone can change your life in the most insane way ever. If you've been spending it. This is why not only should you think or whatever, be grateful for the assholes in your life, but you should also be grateful perhaps that you are an asshole, because the reason that you should be grateful that you're an asshole is it means that laying ahead of you is a paradise unlike anything that you've even thought you could have. That's why it's kind of cool to be, that's why, you know, when you're sick and you've been sick for a while and then the sickness goes away.
Oh, it's heaven.
Yeah. And you're like, oh my God,
yep.
This feels great.
Yep.
And then maybe every subsequent level, who knows, maybe every, you know, every level along the way is just like this, like the Russian egg thing. What is that called? The Russian.
The Matryoshka.
Yeah. Every little thing that falls away, it just gets you deeper and deeper into this coil of paradise.
Of course.
Until when the whole thing falls away and then you realize, oh, I am paradise.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a thing experience it. I'm it experiencing matter or something.
Yep.
That's what they say. I don't understand it. I'm just parroting at this point. Just mimicking like a little fucking toddler. But
it's good to have something to look forward to.
Yes. Oh, Man, this is a good one, Daniela. Thank you so much.
Thank you, universe.
Thank you, universe. That's Hare sweet. Krishna. And you have a podcast called The Drunken Taoist.
Yep.
And where is that?
So Drunken Taoist, thedrunkentaoist.com. You find, plus you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, all the regular ways you guys can get podcasts. And what else? Twitter, I always announce the episode at D Bolelli, D as my first initial, Daniel, and then my last name, B-O-L-E-L-L-I. Those are the easiest.
What about your books?
Books, yes. Please buy them. Yeah, I have three. There's On the Warrior's Path, which is about philosophy and martial arts, 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Religion, which was kind of a just... 50 Things is a funny book. It's like, it's just, that one is less vision and more fun. You know, it's not, there's, you know, On the Warrior's Path, or my last one, Create Your Own Religion. That's like my heart and soul I put in there. 50 Things is a fun game that's cool. Way more going on the comedy route than it is on the disease, the deepest part of me kind of stuff. But yeah, 50 Things and Create Your Own Religion are, as the title may suggest, about religion.
Go to DuncanTrussell.com. I'll have links to all of those books, as well as Danielle's podcast, and of course his Twitter, which is
at DBolelli.
Two L's.
Yeah. First one L, second time two L.
Got it. Okay. God bless you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And if you get a chance, give a shout out to Chris Ryan on Twitter for giving us the nice soundboard that makes the podcast sound so much better than it currently does at this second as I record it into my crappy computer mic. And also, if you like the podcast, give us a nice rating on iTunes. Be sweet to each other. I love you. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna!